Hello and welcome to Sandy by the Sea, a crafty portrait of cultural life on the island at the end of England. I'm James Sandy, and in this programme I meet members of Portsmouth's very own poetry and music club, Tongues and Grooves. I'm joined by Maggie, Chris, Christina, Greg and the two Richards as we explore the growing strength of this creative hub within the city. Okay, so I'm with members of Tongues and Grooves. I'm very happy to welcome them into the studio here on Arundel Street. And I'm going to start with Maggie Sawkins, who I think you're the main collaborator. Is that fair? Is that a fair thing to call you?
I am the main, probably the main organiser and founder of Tongues and Grooves.
So tell us something about Tongues and Grooves, because it's an interesting name, to say the least. But tell us something about the society.
It's not what you're thinking it is.
No, no.
Tongues and Grooves is a poetry and music club. We meet at the Florence Arms in Southsea once a month. We put on as a poetry and music there, featuring professional poets and also local poets.
And that's a broad range of poetry and music. Is there anything you rule out?
We don't really rule anything out, no. It's a mix of published poets and some performance poetry as well.
And you've described it, I think, quite nicely as a sort of creative hub for the city, which I think is a good description.
Someone said yesterday they didn't like the word hub, so I said we'd change it to tub.
Well, I like both, so that's fine. And you've got a number of volunteers and supporters that you've gathered over the years. And you said you started in 2003, is that right?
We started in 2003. Really, that was when I was launching my first poetry collection. And the landlord of the Florence Arms, Greg, he thought it was such a brilliant evening that he asked us to hold a regular event there. And really, it's grown from strength to strength since then, and I think a lot of that is due to our supporters. We always get new people there each month, but also we've got a core of people that have been coming since the beginning.
And is it really, I suppose, one of the aims of the society is to try and give people support in their kind of first steps in terms of, you know, if I've got a poem that I'm hiding under my bed, you could say, well, come along and share it, and, you know, we won't be critical or... Is that one of the aims?
People often do that. People often come for a few months and then they suddenly have the courage to get up and read. It is a two-way thing, so we do encourage people to craft their work before they read it out, because we're still conscious that without an audience, there's no club, really. So it's a kind of dialogue between the performer and the listener.
And some of the other things that I think you're trying to get involved in or trying to promote, I suppose, is a kind of social inclusion, well-being projects, which is interesting because I think you know, people quite often underestimate the kind of creativity power in terms of, you know, maybe helping people sort themselves out or, you know, kind of get better, I suppose. But tell me something about that, because that's an interesting dynamic. It's more than just a club in that sense.
We also run creative writing workshops, and for the past few years we've had funding notably from Small Sparks and Grassroots and the Lottery Rewards for All, and we've run workshops in hospitals and other healthcare settings, and also for people in recovery from addictions, which have gone really well.
We're surrounded, I might have to describe the scene for those listening, I'm surrounded by creative people. I'm quite keen to get some perspectives from them in terms of Richard, how did you come to Tongues and Grooves? How did you get involved?
I was thinking back, I remember the launch of Maggie's poetry, so I can remember back to 2003, I think it was, and I was looking at the date of my first poems, which were about a year later, that having read a friend's poem, someone suggested that I write the sequel to it, and I hadn't really written anything that I would consider getting out from underneath the bed, so I had a go, and particularly with Maggie's encouragement and support, and she's been a bit of a mentor for me, I think, particularly in the early days, and some workshops too. I've written quite a number of poems now, and really enjoy performing them, and I like the contrast between the solitariness of writing and the performing. I love too, so they're quite opposites.
Have you got a solitary place where you write? Is there have you got a shed or under the pier or something hiding out?
It's full. No. As long as I'm surrounded by sort of my boxes and papers and things, I feel comfortable.
And how about you, Chris? Tell us a little bit how you sort of came into the game, as it were.
Well, I used to be a lecturer at a college where Maggie worked, probably still works.
Yeah, still there.
And so I knew Maggie from there, and we did our MAs at a similar time. And so I heard about it through that. And I run a similar club in Alton, the Alton Natives, which is also poetry and music. I love coming down to Tons and Grooves. They come up from Petersfield, and they're wonderful evenings.
So you've got quite a wide reach, really, even though you're sort of based in Southsea. It's kind of right across the South Hants, really. Another Richard Williams, we're doing a register here. Richard, tell me about how you sort of came into the game.
Well, I've been writing for about quite a while, and then I stopped for about 10 years. Life changed and I moved on, and then I started to write again and came along to Tongues and Grooves. That's been about 4 years ago, first time, and read a poem, held the page up, couldn't even read it, I was shaking so much. And really sort of found it a very inclusive, you know, organisation to be part of, and encouraging, and obviously kept going, and then got involved in the management side of things after a while, and it's just moved on from there, really.
How difficult is it to manage creative people? There's a question for you. Very. That's a good answer. It's a very clean answer. I think that's probably quite true as well. Maggie, if we can talk about the membership, because I know you're having a bit of a membership push at the moment, or a membership drive, if you like, and you've got a kind of significant milestone as well coming up for the group.
Yeah, 2013, that'll be our 10th anniversary, so we're kind of planning to do an archive project of the last 10 years, but also to sort of carry it into the future, so that it'd be something that would be a record, not just for us, but for the people of Portsmouth. And we have had some really, you know, really prestigious poets and musicians attend it, so it would be good to keep a record of that for Portsmouth. So we either got to find some funding to support that project, or we're also hoping that members will pay us a nominal sum.
That's nearly as difficult as managing creative people, isn't it? Asking them for a contribution, financial one.
Yeah.
But there you go. Okay.
It's even more difficult.
And we're going to bring Christina in later, I think, to do us a bit of a song, which is quite exciting. I'm looking forward to that. And you have quite a good balance, I think, in terms of poets and singer-songwriters. And I guess you pick up on some real mavericks and characters over the last 10 years. Have you got any particular people that sort of stick in the mind, Richard? You're nodding at that one.
Well, yeah, I was thinking of a guy who used to get up and read his poetry in very halting English. It wasn't English, and it was always difficult to hear and understand what it was about. And one day we persuaded him to read a poem in his native language, which I think is Vietnamese. And although we didn't necessarily understand the meaning of it, just to hear him read so well in his own language was, I thought, really illuminating and brilliant. And being interested in poetry of other languages and hearing other languages, I think that was a moment for me that I thought was really, really exciting.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because quite often sort of the intonation and the flow of poetry is as passionate, or, you know, conveys the emotion as much as the written text.
Often it is the rhythm as much as the words that carry it, especially if you're, that's what's important when you're trying to communicate verbally to a live audience. I mean, if it's on the page, you have time to read it once, or, you know, more than once.
So, and we've had quite a few poets reading the native languages at Tongues and Grooves, and it's always been quite special when they've done that, because you just say, you hear the cadence and you hear the meaning without knowing the words.
Let's talk about the local connection, because I'm sensing that people haven't been in Portsmouth forever and have come to Tongues and Grooves from various walks of life, but actually there's a real focus, I think, for sort of poetry, music and wider cultural activities in the city, which some people are surprised by, because I think people have strange perceptions of the city, but tell me a bit about that in terms of, you know, your backgrounds, and you said sort of how you come to the group, but it would be interesting just to know what people feel about the kind of that local dimension, really.
I think from my perspective, I think there are other cities that have a more visible arts community, like Brighton's a good example of that.
Yeah,
but actually Portsmouth's got a lot going on, and it's just fairly, it's more hidden, I think. It's more It's not as visible, and I think it's got a lot going for it. You know, there's the theatres, you've got obviously Tongues Grooves, you've got a lot of good music venues, and you know there is a good arts community in Portsmouth. It just needs to support and nurturing that.
Okay, so Christina, you've got an interesting story about how you came to Tongues and Grooves.
Yes, I came to Tongues and Grooves around 2 years ago, and actually my neighbour helped me to go there, because actually I didn't believe, actually it was 2 years ago, and I couldn't sing in English that time, and it was terrible, because I wanted to share my music, I wanted to share my songs, but I wasn't able to sing in this language. And Richard, because it was my neighbor, he always telling me, Christina, don't worry, they will understand you, you can sing, you can be yourself, and they will accept you. And they did. So it was a beautiful story for me. It was like, I just said, the Tongues and Grooves gave me back my voice, and I can say it, you know, it's still working. I've got open door, and it's really important for me. It was start, my lovely start here in the city.
That's a really powerful story, in fact. And you're going to play for us now, I think, a song which is a lullaby in Polish.
Yes.
Now, my Polish isn't very good, so you'll have to excuse that. But again, you know, what you're talking about is you're describing more about the cadence was the word we used earlier, the kind of the passion, the emotion behind, you know, the kind of the creative song.
Yes.
So that's great. So when you're ready, play away. Thank you.
Lullaby for my sister. Niech ta piosenka ciszą jest, niech zabierze wszelki szum, niech melodia daj myśl, da nam pokój właśnie dziś. I opuszczą nas złe sny, zapomnimy tamte dni, niech melodia daj myśl, da nam pokój właśnie dziś. Teraz możesz usnąć już, więc spokojnie oczka zmruż. Już anieli schodzą się, by do snu kołysać cię. I już nic nie stanie się, już nie będzie nigdy źle. Ha-ra-ta-ra.
I think that was beautiful, and I think you've certainly found your voice there. Thank you very much
I
for that.
I found my voice, and thanks and grooves.
Thank you. So, Richard, tell us your part in that story, and a very powerful story, and a very powerful song.
Well, it was just a few years ago, not long ago, but I was sitting in my... It was one summer, I think, and the windows were open, sitting at home, and I often heard some sounds coming from next door, and I think I had about some neighbours, which included Christina, who I didn't know at the time, really, very well, but I saw people coming and going, and I just heard this music just like that coming through the window, and I thought it was someone was playing a CD, and I thought it was either Russian or Polish, and I thought, that's really nice, I'd really like to know more about that, and I thought I'd ask someone, you know, if I could find out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly the music stopped, and then I realised it wasn't a CD, and it was actually someone singing, and then I found out that was Christina, and encouraged her to sort of just got the right place for you to come to sing. And I think it took about a year to get her there, and you know, to convince her that it would be absolutely fine for her to sing, whether it's Polish or Russian, which she does too, it would be absolutely fine. And eventually she did. I thought she's been brilliant.
That's great. And I mean, that tells us a lot, I think, about the group and its ability to give people the kind of confidence to, you know, maybe sort of come out of their shell a bit and perform in front of other people, or, you know, just to try and hone sort of some of the creative skills they might not realise that they had, perhaps.
Sure. That's been the same experience for me. So I'd experienced it personally with the poetry, so I knew it was a good place to go.
Maggie, tell us about this poem we're about to hear, this, the Briar Rose, I believe it's called. Tell us something about that.
Yeah, the actual poem is written in the voice of Sleeping Beauty, and it's kind of a different take on the fairy tale. And one of our members, Phil Crinion, who's kind of a electronic musician, if there's such a thing, I'm not sure, but he set some sort of electronic music to that poem, and also some other poets reading their poetry, and brought out a CD with them on.
And is he someone that you met through the group or through another association?
Yeah, he was a husband of one of our poets.
Mm-hmm. And the subject matter is quite interesting, the kind of the fairy tale aspect. What brought you to that? Was that a dream or just a reference you passed? Or
I think it was... I was doing an MA in creative writing at Chichester University, and one of the genres was myth and fairy tale.
Oh, okay.
So I wrote it for my course.
Excellent. Well, let's have a listen to that.
Okay. Just because I am silent, they think I am sleeping. Those men who come on their delirious white horses, who think they can wake me with a kiss. But this is bliss. Feign the sleep of the dead on my bed of damask and lace. I'm in love with these silent walls, with the secret of my breathing. What makes me think I am a bed of roses? My head is filled with thorns.
Now, Richard, you've got a poem that you're going to share with us, which has a curious and interesting title. Tell us what the title is.
It's called Bird in Hand, the FA Cup, 1939 to 2008.
And is it a football-themed poem?
It is indeed, yes. Football and Portsmouth-themed.
Even better. Well, if you'd like to give that to us.
Okay, I'll just explain.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, tell us the backstory behind it.
I went to see the FA Cup after Pompey had won it at a pub called the Bird in Hand, which is where it was kept for most of the Second World War for safekeeping. It, obviously, the poem came out of that that evening of meeting the famous trophy. And so that comes from that. There's a couple of football references in here, which I'll just mention before I read the poem. Wanderers were the first team to win the FA Cup. And at the time, of course, I wrote it, Portsmouth were the last. Tommy Rowe was the last of the 1939 FA Cup winners to die. So just to mention that. Bird in Hand, the FA Cup, 1939 to 2008. We drink in the presence of greatness. A glorious bird of paradise that fills the room with life. Wanderers to Portsmouth, all roads in between. A coach trip ride through hedge-screened fields. This monochrome world that we engraved as so many lives were sliding past, waiting for the blackout to end, as if nothing we did really mattered, as if watching was all that there was. So we taped up all the windows, made do with any small victory, turned out the lights and kept quiet, as a radio spat static and crackled, keeping our hopes in the dark. And here we are, only 9 months on, a country pub where they kept it safe for 5 lost years as a city burned, payloads emptied on a scrap of earth. Abide with me and flags at half-mast. Abide with me in a sea of blue, Wembley Stadium and Carnoustie scores, 40-something men so close to tears, my daughters and I in our Pompey shirts, the final whistle on a perfect day. And here we are on the journey home. Brilliant colours will fade to none as the flags we carry are furled away, like Tommy Rowe at 92, leaving all thoughts in the dark. So drink to the presence of greatness, for everything you do really matters. Enjoy all of your victories. Turn on the lights and sing out, for living is all that there is.
I'm really impressed how you've managed to kind of capture a moment of being in a pub at an exciting phase like that. And in terms of writing that, in terms of committing that to paper, was that, you know, did you have a sort of a big thought download at the time, or was it something that mulled around for a while and then came out sort of gradually? Or
I was interested. I had a thought about the link between obviously the FA Cup, the pub, and also the history of Portsmouth in terms of the Second World War and so on. And obviously Portsmouth Football Club being in the doldrums as well and so on, and all those kind of rebuilding of Portsmouth after the Second World War. So the kind of parallel, actually writing the poem took some time, obviously building and developing it, but that sort of idea fused quite quickly after the...
Did it go through lots of sort of different versions? And
yeah.
Were you sitting in your shed with lots of scribbled bits of paper all over the place? Or
sitting on my virtual shed, yes.
Chris, you've got a piece now which I'm struggling to say, which is Diogenes, I think. Is that correct?
Yes, well done.
Excellent.
Yes.
And just describe that. Tell us something about that just before you share that with us.
All right. I used to live near a Jehovah's Witness family. They were always stuffing magazines through my door, and I look at everything, you know, written and looking for ideas and learn things. And there was an article about philosophers, and I thought it was rather interesting. And there was a mention of Diogenes, and so that set me to research him, and I discovered that Alexander the Great said, if I were not Alexander, I would like to be Diogenes. And so I wrote a poem about him just called Diogenes, and last year there's an international journal called Sons of Camus, and it won their Best Poem Award last year.
Excellent, congratulations.
Thank you, and so that's what I want to read.
Excellent, well let's hear that.
Diogenes. Born down by the Black Sea, Diogenes of the Cynics, philosopher and sometime beggar, housed himself a while in a bathtub. Living in simplicity, he wandered underneath the hot Greek sun, carrying a torchlight which crackled with ironic fire as he went barefoot in search of anyone of honesty or virtue. They buried him, the dog. A monument, the shape of one, was marbled on his tomb. The southern breeze was blowing softly when one day Alexander went to him in Athens, and he found Diogenes sunbathing in the splintered glare. And he asked of him,
What favour in the world, if he could have it, would Diogenes like most? The afternoon shadow rubbed along the earth. Cicadas buzzed in ilex trees in Alexander's empires, and Diogenes the street dog told him, if you just wouldn't mind stepping out of the way from blocking off the sunshine.
Now, Greg, you come from Australia, I believe, where the sun shines, and I detect this from your accent.
Yes, where the sun doesn't shine is where I originally come from. I'm originally from the north of Ireland, but I've lived in Australia for a long, long time. And my wife's a Pompey girl, and so we came over here a few years ago to spend some time here. And I was playing music around the bars and pubs. That's what I do. And my local, we lived just around the corner from the Flow, and it sort of became my local. And I was in there one afternoon, and Greg, the man there, said, oh, you should come down and meet this mob that meet once a month on a Sunday night. You can sing a song, and they're all a bit of crack. So I came down and sang a few songs and got to know everybody really well. They've all become really good friends. And every time we come back, we make sure we catch up with everybody.
That's great. And you must have, I think, of everyone in this room, you must have the most expensive taxi bill to get to the meeting, I guess.
Yes.
Because Australia's a long, long way away. Tell us something about the track we're going to hear a bit from now, the bit
well,
of music.
Well, I've chosen a track of from my favourite poet, who's Bob Dylan. So it's a Bob Dylan track. And
excellent. Well, let's hear that now.
Never been this close before. Never been so easy or so slow. I've been shooting in the dark too long, but something's not right, it's wrong. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go. Dragon clouds so high above, I've only known careless love. It's always hit me from below. Time wrong, it's more direct, right on target, so correct. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go.
Maggie, tell me about Tongues and Grooves and what you've got planned for the future. We've talked about the 10th anniversary stuff, but where's the society going, and what kind of things would you like to see it do in the next sort of 10 to 20 years, in the next few decades, if you like?
Yeah, there's another part of Tongues and Grooves, which is Tongues and Grooves in the community. And we would like to get the community more involved in workshops and taking workshops to different places. We have been asked to run some creative writing workshops at Hasler Immigration Removal Centre.
Mm-hmm.
Richard did a very lengthy funding application to the Arts Council, but it was turned down on just a couple of points, but they are still keen for us to work with them.
You didn't write it as a haiku, did you, Richard?
No, maybe I should.
Maybe you should.
It was too long. So that's one project. Richard's kind of taking the lead for that, and we may be working with other partners for that.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, and thank you for spending your time telling me about the group, and I wish you well, and I'm looking forward particularly to the 10th anniversary when it comes up in 2013. Last thing to say, if people want to find out more information and things that you're up to, there's a website, isn't there, to go to?
Tonguesandgrooves.org.uk.
And be careful when you type that into Google, because you might get all kinds of different things, but there we are. So thank you very much, and thanks for spending your time. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Much.
Sandy by the Sea is written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for 93.7 Express FM.